In Colombia, a store clerk sues her employer claiming she was fired for reporting theft. She wants to testify that a week before her firing, a co-worker told the manager, "The clerk has been stealing from the register." Is that hearsay? It depends entirely on who offers it and why. If the employer offers those words to prove she actually stole, that is textbook hearsay. If the clerk offers the same words to prove the manager had heard an accusation and had a motive to retaliate, it is not hearsay at all. Identical words, opposite answers. This episode is about why. Here is the root. Part 1. The definition. The three-part test, and the move that dissolves half of these questions, which is asking what the statement is offered to prove. Part 2. The two categories the rules define as not hearsay at all. A testifying witness's prior statement and an opposing party's statement. Part 3. Layered statements. Start with why the rule exists, because every category later comes straight out of it. Trials run on live testimony. A witness swears an oath, sits where the jury can watch them answer, and faces cross-examination. Hearsay skips all three. A witness on the stand repeats what a different person said off the stand, and that other person, the declarant, is not here to be tested. Cross-examination exists to expose four dangers: misperception, faulty memory, ambiguity, and insincerity. Hold on to those four, because here is the secret to every non-hearsay category ahead. If a statement is useful without trusting the absent declarant, the danger disappears and the rule does not apply. The baseline is FRE 802. Hearsay is presumptively out and comes in only if it falls outside the definition or fits an exception. So what is the definition? Three parts, all of which must be true. A statement, made out of court, offered to prove the truth of the matter asserted. Miss one, and it is not hearsay. Take those one at a time. A statement means an intended assertion by a person, something that communicates a fact and can be true or false. That element quietly knocks out a lot. Nonverbal conduct is a statement only if the person intended it as an assertion. Nodding yes, a thumbs up, pointing at a suspect in a lineup. Those all assert something. Conduct not meant to communicate is not a statement, even when it implies a belief. Try one. A ship captain inspects a vessel, then sails on it with his own family aboard. That conduct is offered to prove the ship was seaworthy. Hearsay? No. He was not trying to assert anything, so there is no statement at all. The federal rules deliberately resolve these implied assertion situations in favor of admissibility. Two more knockouts. Questions and commands usually assert nothing that can be true or false. And machines and animals are not persons, so their output is not a statement. A radar gun's reading, a breathalyzer, a drug dog's alert. Reliability there is a foundation question, not a hearsay one, but do not overextend it. A text, an email, a signed form. Those are human assertions, statements every time. And out of court just means not made while testifying at this trial. Testimony from an earlier proceeding, a deposition, or a grand jury still counts. Now the third element, where most exam points live. A statement is hearsay only when offered to prove that what it asserts is true. If it matters for some other reason, whether it is true or false, it is not hearsay. Ask one question every time. Does this statement help the offering party only if the jury believes the declarant was telling the truth? If yes, it is hearsay. If it is useful simply because it was said, it is not, because the absent declarant's honesty and memory no longer matter. So memorize the non-truth purposes as a checklist. First, verbal acts, also called legally operative words. A contract offer or acceptance. Words of gift. A defamatory statement, a threat, a bribe offer. Words of cancellation. The saying is itself the operative legal fact. Testimony that the seller said, "I accept," proves a contract formed. Second, effect on the listener. Offered to show notice, knowledge, motive, fear, or good faith. Those breaks are shot. Offered to prove the breaks were bad is hearsay. The same words offered to prove the listener was on notice and drove anyway are not. Third, circumstantial evidence of the declarant's state of mind. "I am the rightful emperor of Franklin," offered to show the speaker was delusional rather than to prove he is an emperor. Fourth, impeachment. Showing a witness told different stories rather than proving the earlier one true. And fifth, simply that a statement was made at all. Which brings our clerk back. The employer offering the accusation to prove she stole depends entirely on a coworker who is not testifying, telling the truth. Hearsay. The clerk offers the same words to prove the manager heard an accusation and acted on it. That works either way. Not hearsay. Fix the purpose first. One footnote. Where a statement is good for a non-truth purpose but not for its truth, the opponent may ask for a limiting instruction under FRE 105. The jury is told to use it only for the permitted purpose. Part 2. Even when a statement is offered for its truth, the rules pull two whole categories out of the definition. Rule 801D says, "These are simply not hearsay at all." That label matters. These are exclusions, and they differ from the exceptions in the next topic. An exception concedes the statement is hearsay and admits it anyway. An exclusion says it was never hearsay at all. So an opposing party's statement is not a hearsay exception. It is defined as not hearsay. Category 1. A declarant witness's prior statement under Rule 801D1. There is a gateway. The declarant must testify at this trial and be subject to cross-examination about the earlier statement. That gate is the whole reason the category works. No testifying declarant, no exclusion. Through that gate, three types: a prior inconsistent statement, a prior consistent statement, and a statement of identification. The inconsistent one carries a strict limit, heavily tested. It counts as substantive proof only if given under penalty of perjury at a trial, hearing, other proceeding, or in a deposition. Test it. At trial, a witness says the light was green. In sworn grand jury testimony, she said it was red. Can the grand jury version prove it was red? Yes. Inconsistent, and under oath in a proceeding. Now suppose she only told her sister. That impeaches her under Rule 613, but the jury may not treat it as proof of the color. And here is a change you need cold, because the exam window straddles it. The Supreme Court adopted an amendment to that rule and sent it to Congress. Absent contrary legislation, it takes effect December 1, 2026, and it deletes the oath requirement. So from that date, any prior inconsistent statement is substantive evidence, so long as the declarant testifies and is cross-examinable. Apply the oath requirement before December 1, 2026, and the amended rule on or after it. Second type, a prior consistent statement. Not hearsay when offered to rebut a charge of recent fabrication or improper motive, or to rehabilitate credibility attacked on another ground. Watch the timing. To rebut fabrication, it must predate the alleged motive to lie. A 2014 amendment broadened the rule to other credibility attacks. Third type, a statement of identification. An earlier identification from a lineup, show up, or photo array is admissible for its truth. It works even if the witness can no longer identify the defendant in court, so long as she is on the stand and cross-examinable. An identification made soon after the event often beats in-court pointing. Category 2. an opposing party's statement, under Rule 801(d)(2), the single most heavily tested non-hearsay rule. Its old name was an admission by a party opponent. The logic is adversary fairness. Anything you said can be used against you, because you can hardly complain that you cannot cross-examine yourself. Two features trip people up. First, the statement need not have been against your interest when you made it. It can be entirely self-serving and still be used against you later. Do not confuse it with the statement against interest exception in FRE 804(b)(3), which needs an unavailable declarant and a statement that really was against interest when made. Second, it only comes in against the party. You cannot introduce your own out-of-court statement under this rule to help yourself. Five categories. The party's own words, including in a representative capacity. An adoptive admission, where the party agreed with someone else's statement. An authorized spokesperson. An agent or employee speaking about a matter within the job while employed. And a co-conspirator speaking during the conspiracy to advance it. Adoption can happen by words, by conduct, or by silence. And silence is the tested one. It works only when three things line up. The party heard and understood the statement. The party was able to respond. And a reasonable, innocent person would have denied it. In Franklin, a companion says in the defendant's presence, "You were the one driving when we hit that pedestrian." He is easily able to deny it and says nothing. That silence can be treated as agreement, but one big exception. In a criminal case, silence after arrest and Miranda warnings cannot be an adoptive admission. People have a constitutional right to remain silent. Now the fine print. For an employee, the statement just has to concern a matter within the scope of the job and be made while the relationship existed. Test it. Right after a crash, a delivery driver tells a bystander, "I was texting and blew the light." Admissible against the employer? Yes. He spoke about his job while employed. That is broader than the old rule, which required a designated speaking agent. For a co-conspirator, the offering party must show the judge, by a preponderance, three things. A conspiracy existed. Both the declarant and the party belonged to it, and the statement was made during the conspiracy and in furtherance of it. That last phrase is where questions turn. A confession to police after arrest is neither. The scheme is over, and informing advances nothing. Idle bragging to an outsider usually is not either. But recruiting a member, updating a partner, or reassuring a buyer usually is. And the conspiracy need not be formally charged as a crime. One limit on the attributed categories. The judge may consider the statement itself when deciding whether the authority, the employment, or the conspiracy existed, but the statement alone cannot establish it. That is the bootstrapping rule. And one recent addition. Effective December 1, 2024, the rule reaches successors. Think of an estate pursuing a decedent's claim, or an assignee in an assigner's shoes. Where a party's liability is directly derived from someone else, statements admissible against that original person are admissible against the successor. Part 3, and it is short. Hearsay within hearsay, under Rule 805. When a statement contains another statement, sometimes called double hearsay, the whole thing comes in only if every layer independently clears the bar. Peel the layers apart. A police accident report records that a bystander told me the blue car ran the red light. To prove that, you need a basis for both layers. The report might be a business or public record. The bystander's statement inside it needs its own basis, maybe an excited utterance if blurted right after the crash. If that inner layer has nothing, the report cannot prove the light was red. Same with an opposing party's statement repeating what a third person said. the outer layer is covered, the inner one is not. One weak link sinks the truth use of the whole. A word on authorities. This episode named no cases, and that was deliberate. The exam gives you a fact pattern and asks what result the rule produces. It will not ask you for case names. Your authorities here are the Federal Rules of Evidence themselves, FRE 802 for the bar, the definition in Rule 801, the two exclusions in Rule 801D, and Rule 805 for layered statements. If you keep only three things, keep these. The three-part definition, because all three must be true. Offered to prove the truth, because pinning down the purpose decides most questions. And exclusion versus exception, because an opposing party's statement is never hearsay in the first place. Now the traps, straight from the examiner's favorites. 1. Do not reflexively cry hearsay. Always ask what the statement is offered to prove, because half of these questions dissolve when the answer is anything other than its truth. 2. Non-assertive conduct, bare questions, commands, and machine output are not statements at all. 3. A prior inconsistent statement is substantive only if made under oath in a proceeding, until the adopted amendment removes that requirement on December 1, 2026. Otherwise, it is impeachment only. 4. An opposing party's statement need not have been against interest when made, and it needs no unavailable declarant. That is the other rule. 5. It comes in only against the party. You cannot offer your own statement under it to bolster yourself, and personal knowledge is not required, so a party's guess or opinion still counts. 6. A co-conspirator's post-arrest confession is neither during nor in furtherance of the conspiracy. 7. In double hearsay problems, every layer needs its own ticket in. And a scope note, the Sixth Amendment Confrontation Clause is a separate limit on testimonial hearsay in criminal cases. It can bar a statement that clears every rule you just learned. Time for the quick check, and this one comes straight from the Bargo Question Bank. A driver rear-ends a cyclist who sues for her injuries. At the scene, trying to look unbothered in front of the crowd, he announces that he has great insurance and always drives perfectly. So this was totally the bike's fault, he says. At trial, the cyclist offers those words against him as evidence he was at fault. The driver objects that the statement was nothing but self-serving bravado when he made it, so it cannot be an admission. Is his statement admissible against him? Option 1. Yes, because a party's own statement need not have been against his interest when made. Option 2. No, because the statement was plainly self-serving when the driver made it. Option 3. No, unless the driver is first shown to be unavailable to testify. Pause here if you want a moment. The answer is option 1. An opposing party's statement is defined as not hearsay whenever it is the party's own words offered against him. It does not matter that the statement was self-serving, even boastful, when he spoke it. Options 2 and 3 are the same mistake wearing two hats. Both borrow from the statement against interest exception, which does require the statement to have been against interest and does need an unavailable declarant. Neither condition belongs here. There are 30-plus more questions on this topic alone, each option explained like that. 5 things to take away. 1. Hearsay needs all three. A statement, made out of court, offered to prove the truth of what it asserts. Miss one, and it is not hearsay. 2. Fix the purpose before you label anything. Verbal acts, effect on the listener, circumstantial state of mind, impeachment, and the bare fact a statement was made are all non-truth purposes. 3. Rule 801D defines two things as never hearsay: a testifying witness's qualifying prior statement, which needs the declarant on the stand and cross-examinable, and an opposing party's statement, which does not. 4. A party's own words come in against him even when self-serving, with no unavailability and no personal knowledge required. 5. Under Rule 805, every layer of a layered statement needs its own ticket in, which is why our clerk can put the same sentence in front of the jury that would have been excluded from her employer's mouth. Same words, different purpose. Next time, hearsay exceptions. Practice this topic with more than 2,900 exam-style questions, free to start, at nextgenbargo.com. This episode is for education and exam preparation only, not legal advice, and we are not affiliated with or endorsed by the NCBE or any bar examining authority.